During fellowship hour not too long ago, one of the children in our religious education program interrupted a conversation I was having in Parish Hall to hand me a card. He did not say a word as he presented this to me. It was a card made out of red construction paper with a heart cut out in the middle. I mention this because, like those other details, it seems salient here. As I took it from his hands, a bit confused by this situation, I asked, "Is this a Valentine?" Surprised and perhaps offended by that suggestion, he told me no. He shook his head for emphasis so that we were both entirely clear that he had far better Valentine's prospects than me. It's not a Valentine. When I opened his card, I found a simple but kind thank you note that he had signed with just his name, telling me that he was glad I was the minister here. There were no X's anywhere, no O's either. During the Faith Keepers program that day, the children had been asked to write some adults they knew in leadership positions to thank them for their service. He was there in Parish Hall on assignment. Embarrassed to have misread the situation, I mumbled an apology to him and awkwardly thanked him for his thanks. Still, I was touched by the small gesture. As your minister, I'm routinely humbled by the sorts of things you send to me or show me. Sometimes you will show me an itinerary from a recent trip, or a copy of your family tree, or the blanket your sister-in-law crocheted you. You will share reading recommendations, newspaper articles, poetry verses, song lyrics, updates on your adult children, or pictures of your pets. You will sometimes send me photos from your garden, watercolors from your usual summer spot, or postcards of an exhibit at your favorite local museum. All of these are nice, but I do not conflate them with niceties. People are pointing me to the things that matter most in their lives. They want a faithful witness who can see what they see and know a portion of what they know. Religious communities like UU Wellesley Hills offer us all a space to share what we love best with others. Ideals and experiences, commitments and causes, stories and sentiments, people and places, and the joys and sorrows we feel for those nearest and dearest to us. These places help us hold our loves in common. Love cannot remain by itself. It has no meaning, Mother Teresa reminds us, adding, it is not how much we do, but how much love we put in the doing, a lifelong sharing of love with others. The parts of our brief stewardship season that I find most meaningful are the membership moments we have during our Sunday services, where people here tell the stories of how they found this congregation, when they made it their home, and how it now figures in their lives. Their reflections are not usually written on red construction paper, but they read like Valentines, because for all intents and purposes, they are. Isn't this the right season for them? Last December, our acting director of educational and family ministries, Michael Packard, and I held our first appreciation session with a few members here, each with varying lengths of time at UU Wellesley Hills. Michael and I have a second one planned a little later in February, which I encourage all of you here to attend. Congregations hold such sessions when they want to more fully appreciate just how much they have to offer others. It turns out that UU Wellesley Hills offers folks a great deal. In the span of only an hour, participants told Michael and me what they admired about this community, how it allowed them to go deeper into their spiritual selves at the same time that it pushed them out of their comfort zones, how it introduced them to good people who helped one another and also demonstrated a commitment to service and action, how it gave them permission to have thoughtful conversations inside and outside of church, and to foster stronger bonds with one another. How they had learned the importance of radical hospitality and felt encouraged by each other's kindnesses. how it provided them a platform to confront cruelty and supported them in making a difference in the wider world. How worshiping together inspired them to create a more purposeful community where love was felt and they were known. Because our Unitarian Universalist tradition is rooted in congregational life, every UU minister needs to have a sponsoring congregation, and in my case, that was my home church in downtown Washington, D.C. I joined the Universalist National Memorial Church in my early 20s when I brought the median age there down by possibly a decade. There were no young adult groups and no innovative programs tailored to me. The church did not appeal to my demographic in the least. It was mostly filled with wonderful middle-aged gay men, white-haired women, and career government types. But I knew when I walked into the sanctuary at UNMC that those people had religion, the best kind, and I wanted it. Better yet, they had been waiting for me, holding a place for me, so that during a stretch of years in early adulthood when I felt particularly lost, they let me know that I had been found, and then showed me to my spot in the pews. The good people at UNMC were not welcoming me into their church, not at all. They were welcoming me into mine. Their church and my church were magically one and the same. To this day, I can never fully explain how or why the people there loved me as warmly as they did. I can only tell you that I knew it instantly and never once doubted it. They believed in the old Universalist motto about preaching kindness and everlasting love, and they lived it in community. This year marks the 250th anniversary of the official arrival of Universalism to these American shores, and later on in the fall, there are celebrations planned to commemorate the exact date on the very site. Last year, we celebrated the bicentennial of the first Unitarian sermon preached in America, and it would take scores upon scores of years before these two traditions would merge to become the Unitarian Universalism we know today. The arrival of Universalist ministry was a momentous event and probably the closest thing we have to a miracle story in our UU history. It began when a British sailing vessel called Hand in Hand ran aground off the coast of New Jersey in September 1770. Aboard was an Englishman named John Murray, a former Methodist preacher who was expelled from his pulpit for proclaiming the heretical doctrine of universal salvation, who then did a stint in a debtor's prison following his dismissal. After the death of his wife and young child, he wanted to make an entirely new life for himself outside the church and far from his country. With those other stranded passengers, Murray had been sent ashore to the Cape of Good Luck, as that part of the Jersey Shore was then called, where a farmer named Thomas Potter resided. During his stay with Potter, Murray shared some of his clerical background with the farmer. In addition to running a sizable farm, Potter had also for several years maintained a chapel that he himself had built on his property. For years, it sat empty and expectant. Convinced of the universal truth of universal salvation, Potter had kept the pulpit open for anyone who dared to preach that doctrine to him and his neighbors. In his autobiography, Murray recalled Potter telling him, "My friend, I have longed to see you. I have been expecting you a long time." But Murray was still very reluctant to return to the religious life. The agreement he made with Potter was that if his ship had not set sail for New York by the Sunday following, Murray would indeed preach the sermon that day. To Potter and his neighbor's delight, Murray was still on shore and stepped back into the pulpit to give them all an encouraging word. While Murray's stay in Good Luck was short, he departed almost immediately after that momentous service for New York. He was launched into his Universalist ministry in America. Upon his death, Potter willed that same chapel to Murray. In honor of that gift, a Universalist conference in 1833 erected a monument to Potter, friend and patron, and Murray, advocate of Universalism, calling upon the dearly beloved brethren gather there to regularly return to that sacred spot, suffused with a spirit of benevolence, which began a religious movement that gave people understanding, hope, and courage, and the edifying company of one another. The singular encounter of Murray and Potter changed the course of religious history in America. Traditionally, Murray has been cast as the hero of this story, but it is clearer to many of us these days that the truest triumph belongs to Potter. He built the chapel and filled the pulpit and invited his neighbors to fill pews. He stayed put and kept the faith when he had no good reason to do so. In that old hymn we sang this morning, we declare that love alone knows whence it came. The letter fails, the systems fall, and every symbol wanes. But the spirit overseeing all, eternal love remains. Potter's belief was in just such a love. Just such a love claimed the ground where a holy encounter could take place. When I walk from Rice House through Parish Hall into the sanctuary, I'm always struck by how many people have held their ground here for so long with such great devotion. The journey of love is a very long journey, the philosopher and poet Muhammad Iqbal wrote. Search and search again without losing hope. You may find sometimes a treasure on the way. Sometimes I wonder, is the way itself the treasure? Last year, when UU Wellesley Hills was in the process of donating its large congregational archives to the special collections in the Theological Library at Harvard Divinity School, I joined with your minister emeritus and our unofficial church librarian, Mark Sheckman, and a couple of devoted lay leaders to pore over the historic materials of this church. I saw antiquated orders of service, hand-lettered membership books, copious committee notes, typewritten appeals for funding, and even the preliminary draft sketches for the rose window so carefully removed from our original chapel and installed overhead in this sanctuary. For decades now, that rose window has served as the emblem of this church, and now a stylized version of it serves as our new logo. Whenever I study that rose window, I feel like I'm reading a Valentine written a long time ago. Increasingly, I'm convinced that there's nothing in this place that's not a Valentine from someone to us. Everything here says, friends, how we have longed to see you. We have been expecting you a very long time. So much love has been put in the doing, so much sharing of love with others. Think about that for a moment. Love laid the stones and framed the doors and installed the windows and built the loft above Parish Hall for our youth. Love sent relief groups to Africa and Transylvania and New Orleans. Love bought the air mattresses we inflate in classrooms whenever family promised guests arrive during our hosting week. Love stocked each shelf in our libraries. Love bought the scores in sheet music. Love fixed the boilers so that other people could come in from the cold to be here with us. Honestly, love keeps fixing that pesky boiler as often as it breaks, because love never fails. UU Wellesley Hills is not my church. But frankly, it is not your church either. We might be tempted to split the difference and call it our church. That would be another error on our part. Instead, this church belongs to everyone now on their way to us. whether they have been recently wrecked, or somehow run aground, or lost for a while, or if they come here from far away, or had to leave a religious tradition that otherwise would have cast them out. This is their not yet but someday soon church. Friends, we are waiting for them in this house of worship that love and we built together. When we get real religion, we recognize that. Look around you. Everything here is an X or an O. If we keep our eyes open, along with our hearts and minds and hands, we see that there are X's and O's everywhere in this place. X's and O's. X's and O's everywhere.